you're too busy to set goals, or if you're unsure what the right goals are for you, or if you're just not clear on what's next for you in your business and your life, I've got the solution you've been looking for. Join my free 7-day course designed for athletic-minded men who want to maximize their potential in business and life. And I'm going to help you create a clear plan for achieving your biggest goals faster. So if you feel like you're driving with the parking brake on, if you feel like you're going 100 miles an hour all day long, but not really moving the needle in your life, get started with me today. Get instant access to this 7-day course where you and I will get to interact live with each other. Plus, you'll have access to a community of like-minded, high-performing, athletic-minded, competitive men looking to unlock their next level as well. Just visit jimharshawjr.com/free. That's jimharshawjr.com/free. If you're too busy to set goals, or if you're unsure what the right goals are for you, or if you're just not clear on what's next for you in your business and your life, I've got the solution you've been looking for. Join my free 7-day course designed for athletic-minded men who want to maximize their potential in business and life. And I'm going to help you create a clear plan for achieving your biggest goals faster. So if you feel like you're driving with the parking brake on, if you feel like you're going 100 miles an hour all day long, but not really moving the needle in your life, get started with me today. Get instant access to this 7-day course where you and I will get to interact live with each other. Plus, you'll have access to a community of like-minded, high-performing, athletic-minded, competitive men looking to unlock their next level as well. Just visit jimharshawjr.com/free. That's jimharshawjr.com/free.
Set goals for how you want to make people feel. Set a milestone for how you want to affect something else or someone else. I want this individual's life happiness to grow. You're going to set goals for your team, set goals for yourself and how you want to affect your team.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic-Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, consistency, and focus in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harshaw Jr., and today I bring you Steve Tashjian. Steve is essentially the real-life Ted Lasso. Here's why I say that. He was the first full-time American performance specialist in the English Premier League. So he led the sports science efforts for Everton Football Club. And, you know, they played against, you know, Manchester United and Liverpool and Man City and Arsenal and Chelsea, all of those. And so he lived that life, lived in that world for a long time. He's also prepared triathletes for the Kona Ironman, which is the world championships for the Ironman. He's prepared boxers for world title fights. He's worked with the U.S. men's national soccer team in preparation for the World Cup. So he's worked with elite athletes. He also works with leaders of companies and presidents and executive vice presidents and leadership at companies. One of them, what you would know, is this company called Stanley 1913. I don't know if you know what these are, but these Stanley cups are like all the rage these days. My daughter had to have one for Christmas. Apparently they help you drink water somehow. I don't know, but it's a stainless steel insulated cup, very high quality. And she carries it with her everywhere. It's kind of crazy how these things just kind of catch on. But anyway, Steve has worked with executives at Stanley. He's worked with executives at the Phoenix Suns, Colorado Rapids, and other organizations. And, you know, he's given keynotes and he talks leadership, he talks organizational identity, and he talks performance. And that's what we talk about today. He is the founder of the Elevation Project, which collaborates with elite organizations and institutions to build high-performing teams and high-performing systems. And you're going to get a lot out of this that you can apply directly to your life, to your business life, and even to your personal life. So here we go, my interview with Steve Tashjian. So you're basically like, you're a little bit of a real-life Ted Lasso. I mean, you're the first full-time American performance specialist in the English Premier League. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I've told this story a few times, and it's a mix of knowing the right people, being in the right place at the right time. But then what I also always follow it up with is at any given time when you get an opportunity, your reputation is going to get pressure tested. And I think at that point, I've always been in a place where my reputation helped me seize opportunities like that. I had just finished 2.5 great years with Columbus Crew under Ziggy Schmidt, God rest him. And we had won MLS Cup in 2008 together. And then you know, I had spent two preseasons, 2008, 2009, in the UK with the crew as a part of our preseason. And we spent both of those preseasons either playing or training at Everton Football Club's training ground. So we got to meet those folks. We got to meet David Moyes and his staff and the high performance group. And when I caught wind that the opportunity was available, it was because David Moyes had already hired an American company. At the time, it was called Athletes Performance. Now it's called Exos. He had already hired that company to be a part of the high performance team at the club. There was a point in 2009 where the relationship with the individual that was filling the contract just soured with the club, and they had moved that individual on. And now there's this opening, and the company, Athletes Performance, along with Everton, was just looking for the person, the right person to fill the role. I have known folks at Athletes Performance for a long, long time. And they reached out and said, you know, would you be interested in applying for this? And at the time, I had just signed a brand new contract with Columbus. And so I had to say no. But I don't know why I did it, but in that new contract with the crew, I stipulated that at any point, if I received an offer to go abroad or I received an offer for the men's national team, I could exit my contract. And thank God I did that. The only rule was I couldn't leave until May 31st. So when they reached out, I said, I'm really interested, but I can't do anything until May 31. You know, if it doesn't get filled, please let me know. June 1st, I got a phone call. I said, do you still want it? So thank goodness. I think there's, you know, a lot of people on paper that were probably more qualified than I was, to be honest. But in the end, I had a lot of people pushing for me to be the one. In addition, I had some things on my resume, you know, in performance coaching. I'm also a physical therapist, which is pretty rare for a performance coach. I think it separated me from the group. And long story short, I had people, right circumstance, right opportunity. But at the same time, when they called and investigated who I was, you know, my reputation, thankfully, was able to, you know, seal that for me. So there it is. You know, I end up in Europe, and it changed the course of my career, changed the course of my family. My daughter was born in the UK, and all of a sudden now we have this connect to people thousands and thousands of miles away on a different continent.
Well, that's the case, I think, a lot of times with breaks. Like whenever you get a break, it's like, am I good at what I do? And do I know somebody? And then you get the break. Like, you have to be good at what you do. Like you said, there are probably other people more qualified, but it's like maybe they were more qualified on paper, but obviously people interacted with you. They saw how you carried yourself. And that's important. Like somebody's always watching. Like somebody's always watching. It's like, do the right thing, show up, do your work, be integrous with how you go about yourself, and good things can happen. And there's also another concept that I interviewed a guy named Josh Bonital recently. And he brought up this concept of triangulating, like, where can I be the best, like in the top 1% in the world? Maybe you're not in the top 1% of the world of physical therapists, maybe not in the top 1% of the world in sports psychologists or sports performance coach, but you put those two things together and you're already working with a soccer team. And it's like, you're in the top 1% in the world of the people who we need, like you're the right guy. And so I think it's really helpful to think about that for the listener. If you think like, you know, how do I become the best financial advisor or teacher or sales manager in the world? Well, maybe you don't need to be the best. You got to be good at what you do. But what else is it about you and your background that makes you among the best in the world at what you do? So what was that like working in the English Premier League? What was it like standing on the sidelines of a game and being at those games and working at, I imagine by a lot of standards, it's the biggest sports league in the world.
Yeah, my hair was on fire at first, to be honest. You're in it, and every day seems like you're on another planet, to, you know, as far as I was concerned. You know, I'm in my mid 30s. At this point, I'm trying to get comfortable with, you know, something as simple as I'm driving on the opposite side of the road. I'm asking for chips and I'm getting French fries. I don't know what's going on here. The entire staff was Scottish. I don't understand a single thing anybody's saying. And their accents were super thick and heavy. And there's times when we'd be at the table and there's discussions taking place, and coaches need to talk quietly. They don't want players to hear. So they're all discussing something. Their volume is so low already. Plus they're speaking with an accent I can't understand. And then they look to me and say, isn't that right, Tash? I'll go, absolutely. Absolutely, boss. Yeah, absolutely, boss. And I have no idea what anybody said. So that's a big part of it. You're just trying to, you know, grow accustomed to the culture first and foremost. Then I'm there without my wife. You know, I had to go ahead without her, and I'm traveling.
So you really are Ted Lasso here.
Yeah, for sure. I'm living out of a suitcase for quite a long time. And then you're just trying to come to grips with a whole new squad of players. You're trying to come to grips with a whole new culture of sport. I hadn't been in an environment where sport, it was such a heavy influence in the day-to-day happiness or sadness of everyone, not just in Liverpool, but in the entire country. I had never experienced that before. So the pressure to perform was at a level I had also not experienced. The consequences of actions, you know, were now tenfold greater. So this, the things like, you know, the things like what it would be to experience each stadium for the first time, there was newness to that. There was excitement to that. You know, even the interaction with players that I'd watched on television for a long time as a fan, now I'm coaching them, which was a much different experience than I'd had in the past. But overall, I think you just, it was a good lesson for me in how little process and routine I had up to that point in my career. I was sitting there thinking, you know, I've got 10 options to solve these issues. And because I hadn't really settled into a professional routine, it took me longer than it should have to really settle into that group, settle into my role and my process. And I learned a lot in that first 6 months. But once you kind of get a grip of it and you start thinking, and there are some good people there that helped me focus my thoughts, focus my attention to how to get things done. And I was lucky that they, you know, they didn't have their own agendas. They were very selfless, like super great people at that club, incredible people. I'll never forget that experience there and their family for sure.
This is such a critical piece of performance. And now we're not talking about the player's performance. We're talking about your performances. Like, you had people there to support you, to guide you. Like, it's so important to have that in our work environment and in our lives, to have coaches, to have mentors to help you along. And you are now thrust into a situation where it's about your performance. And for my listeners, it's the same thing for them. Like, they're showing up at work and it's about their performance, whether they're in sales or they're a leader or they're trying to become a leader. It's about your performance. When most people go to work, there's not millions of people that their happiness and sadness and emotions rides upon the winning and losing of the team. And so now you're now an integral part of this team. Did you have the awareness in those moments to think about, okay, this is about my performance now. Now I have to kind of take my own medicine and apply this stuff that I'm teaching to myself. And it's hard to do. It's hard to coach yourself. That's why I think we all need that person outside of us who's on the outside of the jar. We're on the inside of the jar trying to read the label. You know, they're on the outside of the jar. But anyway, did you apply any of that? Did you try to? Do you look back and kind of wish you did? Or tell me about that part of the experience.
I think it was a mix of some of my better qualities taking over, as well as serving in these positions to really model some of the things I was seeing from people I was learning to respect there. And it was a combination of those two. The one thing I'd say is, regardless of whether I really had an idea of what my process was and what my routine was for solving difficult circumstances, what I always had was a standard for what was acceptable and not acceptable from my effort. Like, what's an acceptable standard of performance? And I remember speaking to Steve Round at the time, who was the assistant manager there, who's now the assistant manager at Arsenal. And when I said those words, whether I make mistakes, whether I do things right or I do things wrong, I won't sacrifice the standard of the work and the detail. I was going through a difficult circumstance. And when I was speaking to him for advice, I said, whether I make the right decision or the wrong decision, what I'll never sacrifice is the standard of the work I'll put towards it, the standard of the detail that I'll and attention I'll put to it. And when I said the word standard, he immediately put Bill Walsh's book in front of me. The score will take care of itself. He says, you need to read this book. That was the start for me of understanding the true power of having process, the true power of having a dedication to the standard at which you fulfill and execute your process. It's not about winning and losing. It's about day-to-day execution of your role, day-to-day execution of the details of your role. And I will say, from that point forward, I had a completely different perspective on how I was going to approach my days. And then he gave me, they call me coach. You know, now I have these two books that probably guided my early foundational philosophy on what process looked like, on what, you know, winning looked like. But then it also made me more curious about what does it really take to be a great leader, a good person. You know, what does it look like? That was the start of it. And that, I think from that point on, it gave me a totally different perspective on how I evaluated what I was hearing. When I would listen to people, I could now immediately evaluate it from a place of, one, does this sound like a standard that I find acceptable or not? You know, and I started to separate myself in a way to make sure that I wasn't going to be negatively influenced by individuals that, you know, felt comfortable with a different standard than I did. And that was the beginning of me just focusing on, listen, you know what your role is. It's here. Just you're here to serve. So if that's the starting point, I need a whole foundation that allows me to serve. And what's my process going to be to serve the best way possible? And that's kind of the way I moved forward. Right around that probably 8-month mark in my first year, I think exponentially things changed for me in how I approached my day to day.
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now back to the show. So is it fair to say that you start with the end in mind? You know, Stephen Covey, one of the 7 habits of highly effective people, start with the end in mind. You have the goal, and then you kind of reverse engineer what is the standard that I have to live up to and execute at? What is the process that I need to do in order to give myself the best shot at achieving that? I mean, that's how I think of it. Is that how you think of it, or do you have a different take on that?
I would definitely say I wouldn't call it that. I start with a goal.
Do you believe in goals? I mean, do you set goals? Do you believe in goals?
I believe in knowing what you want the outcomes to be. I believe in that. I believe in spending as much time as possible understanding first personally what your purpose is, what values you align with as an individual. Secondly, the purpose of the organization or department you're in, and focusing on that vision, mission, and values of the organization. Those to me replace what I think are you know, goal. A great way of looking at it in terms of my perspective is either an Olympic cycle or a World Cup cycle we just went through. If your focus is always on some sort of a result at the end, makes it very difficult to focus on a 4-year period. It's just too long. It's too big. So in that sense, I don't love the idea of starting with goals and working backwards. Because I'll tell you this right now, if you were to tell me in 4 years' time, it's going to look like X back at the beginning, I would never have believed you. I could not have predicted where we ended up. It would have been impossible, but the road made it more and more clear. The needs and expectations changed constantly.
Yeah, you can't see step 10 from step 1. You can't see step 20, 30, 50 from step 1.
Right. So I think as it relates to the, you know, I don't call them goals, I call them milestones. I think that's more appropriate for what this really is for most of us. You know, for organizations, for individuals, we're just working through a book. We don't know how it ends. We're just writing chapters, and we have no idea what the next chapter is going to look like. Even when I started my career as a physical therapist in a private outpatient facility in Pasadena, California. There's no way I would have predicted in, you know, 20 something years, I'd be right here in front of you doing what I'm doing now. Absolutely no chance I would have gotten anywhere close to predicting it. But along the way, I tell you what, if I would have had some sort of long-term goal of what I thought I wanted my life to be, I would tell you I would never be where I am right now in front of you. It would have, I think, you know, it would have been square peg in a round hole. I think that's something that I try to communicate to folks that I work with now. It's like, spend less time worrying about driving what this is going to be in your life, per se. Instead, be very, very clear about what makes you happy. Be very clear about what brings you joy. Be very clear about what's going to make your whole holistic universe, including your family, including your friends, including what is going to move that towards joy. That's all that matters. And I don't mean to get philosophical, but if you try to like pinpoint what that's going to be when you're 25 years old, like when I graduated from grad school, I would have been way off and I wouldn't have enjoyed my life, you know?
Yeah. So I very much believe in setting goals, but I think it's really a matter of semantics. And I think our philosophies align because, so we talk about purpose and values. I mean, this is literally where we start my coaching program is with like vision for your life, values, like what do you want? And then it's like, in order to extract the core values and then say, okay, now let's design goals around those core values in every area of your life, not just sport. Now there's, you know, in the real world, we have, you know, families and health and well-being and so many things pulling at our time, not to mention our career. But then you go, okay, you know, what is the goal? Knowing that, like Steve Jobs said, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect the dots looking backwards. So we have the goal, we have the target. Now, as I walk down the path, you know, to use that analogy, Reveal Your Path is the name of my coaching program. So that's why I like this analogy is like, you can't see 10 steps down the path from step one. You take 3 steps down the path and you go, ah, okay, wrong goal, wrong target, wrong milestone. That doesn't feel quite as good. This over here, this door just opened, this better aligns with my values, my purpose, what I want to do, what makes me happy, all of that. I think people have to understand, like you're saying, you can't be so locked in on one thing that you're going to miss the better thing, the right thing. That's harder in the real world. And you know, we see what's posted on social media, we see what's parked in our neighbor's driveway, and we start aligning ourselves and our goals with what is supposed to make us happy or what we think is supposed to make us happy or what makes our parents or our neighbors happy, but maybe not me. And I think that's where a lot of people struggle. So do you encourage people to actually do the core values work and the purpose work, or is that just something you think people should know?
I have found that not many people know. Not many people spend time at all.
I think a lot of people think they know until they get into it and actually start doing the work.
Or until somebody asks them the question, like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I think that's the big one is on the spot. It's, yeah, it's this, this, and this. And I'll go, well, what does that mean? Define it. You want to inspire people. Well, what does that mean? You know, I want to inspire people. You can't use the word to define the word. I would say this, I've spent less time trying to connect goals to something quantitative, to be honest. Somebody said, I want to, you know, my goal is to earn this much in this quarter of profit revenues, whatever it might be. I do love that. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's always this motivation to try to achieve something tangible. But what I say to that is, guys, that's easy. That's an easy thing to do. You evaluate what things have looked like from quarter to quarter, what things have looked like from year to years past, and you just evaluate what would be a great increase. That's easy. Instead, set goals for how you want to make people feel. Set a milestone for how you want to affect something else or someone else. I want this individual's life happiness to grow. You know, if you're going to set goals for your team, set goals for yourself and how you want to affect your team. And it's harder. It's more complex in terms of the contextualization of something like that. But as you're trying to create a way for the milestone to create meaning for yourself as an individual, as a leader, spend more time evaluating what a milestone that's defined by how you're going to make other people feel, how you're going to affect other people or the institution as a whole. Those, to me, create more power. They create the ability for a sustained energy. You know, a lot of times we just run out of gas at a certain goal, either because it was the wrong goal or we projected too far forward and it's difficult to feel connected to it because it was so far ahead. A lot of the times it's because it's not really connected to anything that, you know, has some sort of meaning beyond yourself, right? I think that's what's great about thinking about other people first and these milestones is there's so much traction and magnetic pull when you realize you're involved in something that's bigger than yourself. That's, you know, it's pretty motivational.
So if you're in a company and your boss, maybe your boss's boss or some at higher level, there's like, there are revenue targets. I want to hear your philosophy on this. So for the listener who's saying, okay, I've got revenue goals that my boss has for me, or I have, you know, revenue or whatever it might be, right? Units moved, whatever it is in the listener's world. They may be listening and saying, I can't set goals, they might be saying, on how I make somebody else feel. To me, it sounds like if you're setting goals around how you're making other people feel, especially if you're a leader, then they're going to execute well, want to show up for work on time, job satisfaction. They're going to want to stay there. You're going to increase retention, and performance just goes up when you focus on people. Am I right? Is this where you're coming from? Or okay, unpack that for me.
Yeah, you know, I'm leading a team of 7 or 8 people, let's say. Regardless, I'm going to have to set, because I have to please senior VPs, senior executives, I have to please the board. I have to have targets quarterly. I have to set them, I have to hit them, I have to set them for everybody. But what I try to do to get people to understand what I'm saying is, are you also thinking about how you accomplished it? That's an important piece. So in that space, if you were to take the example you gave, and you were to say, all right, for X individual on my team, what I think would be a great year would be that by the end of the year, because of how much effort I put into this individual feeling a sense of belonging in this organization, feeling a sense of empowerment, feeling a sense that out of all the decisions they've ever made, they're in the right place. If I accomplish that as a leader, I'm probably going to accomplish all the other quantitative goals. And I think that's a perspective that's difficult when you're young. I would have had a really difficult time kind of letting go of the quantitative side of it. But the funny thing is you're not really going to be able to get away from the quantitative milestones you have to set in the corporate space. Like that's natural. I think it's healthy to do that. But I could also hit every single target and not become a better person. I might even become worse because of my drive towards this quantitative goal.
So this is going back to purpose. This is connecting your work to who you are, who you want to be in the world, how you want to live, you know, the legacy that you leave. All of that is so much bigger than revenue target.
For sure. And I think personal growth, like my goal for somebody on my team isn't just about whether they hit financial targets. Like I have a personal responsibility to nurture the growth of this individual. They wouldn't be here or they will leave if you don't engage in that as a priority. Number one objective for me, I provide safety in this organization. I provide belonging in this organization. I provide growth as a leader. I wouldn't be in this position if I wasn't good at making money for the company. I'm a leader and I'm doing that already. If I want to go to the next level, I'm going to empower people on my team to become leaders like me. Because if you want the company to grow and be sustainably successful forever, keep developing and nurturing great, great leaders. You're going to be well on your way. And sometimes it depends on where you are in the corporate space in terms of how much bandwidth you can dedicate towards these types of personal conceptual milestones for people versus, you know, me, listen, it doesn't matter if I don't hit targets. Doesn't matter if I'm a good person, right? I won't move up in this company if I'm not executing. Like things of that are, I get the balance. Don't get me wrong. I get the balance. But as soon as you start getting higher up into leadership areas, what you and I both know is it gets lonely. I'm sorry. Like the higher and higher up you go, it doesn't get better and better from a personal perspective. It gets lonelier and lonelier. It gets harder and harder. And the pressure gets worse and worse. Well, so now in that space, what is it that I really want to try to accomplish as an individual leading in that type of an environment? Is it numbers? Is that really going to make it better? Is that really going to make it joyful? My experience is no. When you get to that level, it's about how much influence can I have in making things better? And what does that mean for each individual? It's like a snowflake. But what I'd say is if I'm focused on, can I make things great? Can I really bring joy? Can I bring purpose to this space that I'm in? Can I connect people to something super sustainable in a way where everybody's experiencing a high level of connectedness and joyful experience? That's going to make this whole thing feel less lonely for me at this position that I'm in. You know, and that's what I've experienced my whole career. Stress, pressure, like high level pressure, oppressive pressure that crushes a lot of people.
Yeah. One of my first clients ever called me up and asked me for coaching out of the blue. And he's the head Olympic coach and said, it's lonely at the top. That was the reason he gave me. He's like, I need you in my corner here because it's lonely at the top. And I want to point out to the listener who's, if you're not a leader, you want to be a leader, you can still do all of this. Like, this is all part of the process. This is all part of becoming a leader, proving yourself, positioning yourself for the next promotion, to be given the title of a leader, even if you're not a leader. And it's very easy to think that you can't do anything from where you are, but you can. So I want to shift a little bit, Steve, and talk about routines and habits for peak performance in the real world, in business, in life. Are there any things that you do, whether it's morning routines or habits that you do now or have done over your career, that you feel have really helped you perform at your best?
I was definitely a product of that period when General McRaven's Make Your Bed speech came out and went viral. You know, and I was one of them. Every morning I got up, I made my bed. I was, you know, making my bed just really was setting the stage for me to understand the bigger message. And the bigger message was creating the opportunity for yourself to have stability in your life so that you're ready for pressure. This is what I think routine does, because the biggest question I get asked is why? Why do I need a routine? I've talked to a million people that said, hey, I read that if I wake up at 5 a.m. every morning, I'm going to be more successful, because I read that study that most successful people are early risers. Well, what I'd say is, I don't think it's because you woke up at 5 a.m. It's based on what you do when you wake up from the time you go to sleep. That's my personal perspective on this. I know many, many super, super successful people that don't wake up at 5 a.m. It's personal choice. I can't help it anymore. My life required me to wake up early because that's what professional sport does. I don't wake up early because I want to. I wake up early because my body says you're waking up. And that's kind of that's what happens now. But at the end of the day, it's about what you do when you wake up. Jim, one of the most important things I do every morning is I make coffee for my wife. Does that contribute to me being a great leader? Does that contribute to the fact that even though I make coffee at 7 a.m., does that contribute to that fact I crushed it when it came to 6 p.m.? I don't know. But what I'd say is,
contributes to your wife being happy or not maybe giving you hell whenever she wakes up. So, okay.
Well, what I'd say is I've committed to things that put me in a headspace to be able to deal with pressure and stress. We are complex biological organisms. And my job my whole life has been to sustain the performance of human beings, to sustain the performance of complex biological systems. And there's no easy answer to doing that. And over time, what I've found is that as you develop process, and for us, I'll use my personal situation as, you know, high performance director over time, my process is, how do I evaluate the load that's being given? How do I evaluate the response, the player's response to that load? And then how do I rectify what I found out from their response and create the cycle that creates physical success? At some point, your whole entire world is going to get tested. And when it does, that's the point where you realize where your system is fragile. Well, what I'd say is dealing with pressure and stress is about how you've built in your ability to have flexibility, adaptability, agility in your department, within your role, within your company. What I'd say is it's very difficult to be agile, very difficult to be adaptive and flexible on an unstable foundation. So what does process and routine give you? Process and routine gives you a home base. So as soon as things go, oh crap, you can settle yourself and go, what do I know? What can I bank on? What's predictable? And you want to create as much predictability as possible so that as soon as things look different, you know what you don't need to worry about. Now I'm just going to focus on the agility that's necessary to refine to solve this new issue that's come. That's what routine does for me. Right? Why does it allow me to be a better leader? Because I made coffee in the morning. Because that particular part of my day was stable. That particular part of my routine was in line. And there's all kinds of things that come from that. You know, there's a meditative process that takes place in just knowing that I have clarity. I don't have to dedicate my brain power towards that, towards those things, and it frees up that headspace for me to focus it on something new that's not predictable, right? Well, if everything's unpredictable, I'm sorry, you're in trouble. When more chaos arrives, you're not in a position to really be able to handle it. That's what routine does. And those are some of the things that allow me to be successful. And it drives my wife crazy. I'm very, very routine oriented.
What are some key routines that you do other than making the coffee?
If you were to look at my schedule on my calendar, and I've had to do this as I transitioned into consulting, because you know it from your experience, you can get lost in the freedom that you have in your schedule. You know, I regiment on my schedule the things that I'm going to do to stay grounded. Right? I'm going to read the newspaper and listen to a record from, you know, 8 to 9 every morning, right? After I make coffee, that's what I'm going to do. And I don't let anything jeopardize that. And then I have a window where I'm open to do my work. But when I'm doing my work, I don't have other things, TVs. I have a lot of things going on, just not as a consultant, but as a musician. And a lot of times I'm working on something consulting and I get a melody in my head. I'm tempted to just reach over because my keyboard's over here. And I get tempted to, maybe I should. And it's like, no, I scheduled those things in a way to keep me in a position where I know what's predictable and what's not, right? I do the same thing for my workouts. I do the same thing for music time. I block it out. Okay, great. I don't care if you're 3/4 of the way through and you're crushing it on this report you're supposed to do, proposal, whatever it is. I'm going to stop. I'm going to put it down and I'm going to transition so that I can maintain just this balance that allows me to be happy. I'm better for my family if I'm balanced. I'm better for my family if I'm not thinking about that thing I should have done, right? I sacrificed that music time to finish this proposal. Now, I know my kid wants to spend time with me, but I really want to go back and lay that little melody down that I heard. And those are the processes that help me.
Love that. They're different for everybody. And I like that you use the word balance. I think there's a lot of talk out there these days that it shouldn't be called balance. It should be called integration or alignment or harmony, whatever the term people use. I think we're all talking about the same thing. It's a matter of it's a matter of semantics. It's a matter of fitting the things in your life that are most meaningful to you in whatever cadence that works for the individual. Steve, I feel like there's so much more to unpack here. You've got so much wisdom in there. Where can people find you, follow you, hire you, et cetera?
You can find me on LinkedIn. That's a really, really quick way. Not many people in the world named Steve Tashjian. If you search it, you're probably going to find me. And then my website, elevationprox.com, the company Elevation Project, which was started in 2019, to be honest, but really went full scale at the beginning of 2023. The Elevation Project is at elevationprox.com. Those are probably the two best spots.
Excellent. For the listener, as always, we'll have those in the action plan. Steve, it was great to connect with you. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us.
Likewise, Jim. Thank you so much for the opportunity, man.